WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Prayers around the world for Pope Francis, who remains hospitalized for a 10th day in Rome with what the Vatican says is a lung infection. The Vatican today said blood tests show the Pope is in early kidney failure. After Elon Musk's email to federal employees to list five things they accomplished last week or consider themselves out of a job, Musk now appearing to be softening his tone on the initiative, posting on X that, quote, the bar is very low here. On ABC's This Week, New York Congressman Mike Lawler supporting Musk.
As the Department of Government Efficiency moves ahead, what they are seeking to do is ensure that every agency and department is effectively and efficiently doing their job.
One day from the third anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky saying he would resign his office if Ukraine were allowed to join NATO. President Trump called Zelensky a dictator last week. This is ABC News. Ukrainian President Zelensky today saying he would step down if his country were offered NATO membership. Zelensky telling reporters there is progress in talks over a natural resource deal President Trump has been pressuring him to sign. ABC's Patrick Reeval is in Kyiv.
He said that his chief of staff is currently speaking with the Trump administration, including National Security Advisor Witkoff, and said that now that $500 billion number is not in the discussions. And he said that we are making some progress in Ukraine. There is a sense that President Zelensky was quite punchy in this press conference and basically was saying we're not going to be pushed around.
The FDA saying the diabetes drug Wegovy and Ozempic, which are also largely used for weight loss, are no longer in shortage. Very popular, and they had been, but now the drug has apparently increased in demand, and the market has now met that demand. They've been in shortage since 2022. Dave Packer, ABC News.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Trevi Olson joins us.
There's a hockey game tomorrow night between Canada and the U.S. Everywhere up in Canada when they were playing the game, the U.S. was being booed. Imagine how you would feel if your neighbor were constantly saying, I'm taking your backyard. You would find that very serious. That's what's happening around the world. We are going to have no friends, period.
That is so well put. And that matters.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. We've had lots of gray days here in Wisconsin, and February is when seasonal affective disorder can really hit hard. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Nationwide, up to 6% of the population suffers from seasonal affective disorder. People in northern climates are especially affected. SAD is typically a temporary form of depression triggered by lack of sunlight in the fall and winter months. Dr. Shyla Murgain, clinical psychologist at UW Health, says women and younger people tend to experience higher rates of SAD, with symptoms peaking in January and February.
We can find that we're more sluggish, our mood is lower, and we're not getting that kind of exposure to light that really maintains that healthy circadian rhythm.
Murgain suggests aiming for at least 30 minutes a day of sun exposure or supplementing with light therapy at home using a full-spectrum light bulb. Other strategies include getting daily exercise, maintaining a routine, prioritizing self-care, and supplementing your diet with vitamin D3. People experiencing SAD can feel fatigued, have difficulty concentrating, or notice changes in sleep and a loss of interest in activities and socializing. Dr. Rhonda Randall with United Healthcare says boosting social connections is one big factor.
when people are socially isolated, it does have a significant impact, not only on your emotional and mental well-being, but also on your physical health.
She says in some cases, medication and therapy could be effective, so seek help from a mental health professional if symptoms persist. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Clouds giving way to sunshine with highs reaching the upper 30s, a light southwest breeze of 5 to 10. Clouds around the area tonight, they'll roll in from the north and west. Lows will drop to the mid-30s. On Monday, a partly sunny sky, west breeze and upper 40s. Currently 38 degrees.
Maggie Dawn.
Monday, we kick off at 2 p.m. with a discussion of Maggie's Metrics. What makes local officials and elected judges good, bad, or just downright ugly? We discuss next.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review. Appreciate so very much and value so very much your contributions to our discussion, along with my terrific producer, Greg. We're in the studios here of Civic Media, taking your phone calls at 855-752-4842. You can also be a part of our text line. Drop a note, a comment, a question, as several of you have done, as we talk about this major decision made by our president to issue an executive order this past Tuesday that does many things along the way, arguably brings within the ambit of the White House all sorts of executive agencies, independent executive agencies, executive with a small e, because they execute the law, at least up until now, independent of a president. The president now signing this order, bringing them all within the ambit of the White House, arguably. And yes, indeed, all of this will be challenged, whether it is the SEC or the Federal Trade Commission or the Federal Communications Commission and the NLRB, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Reserve, all of these things, as the president goes about to implement this executive order, all of them will end up in federal court. And as we said during the course of our first hour, federal judges are not only taking these cases, but very promptly imposing what are called temporary restraining orders and also injunctions against the president from going ahead with this. So these things will all be subject to federal oversight in the courts of our nation. And we can look forward, presumably, to hearty discussion about the laws of our nation, what the Constitution establishes, and hopefully judges embracing. Judges, again, of all political persuasions, regardless of who appointed them in recent times and in past, are saying consistently that the Constitution means something and that these things that are overtly unconstitutional, inconsistent with precedent of the Supreme Court, cannot stand. And so we'll look forward to more of that litigation pending. We'll get in just a moment to some of the concerns about that, as this president, who has now articulated his view that he is the law, l'état c'est moi, will increasingly, in response to what federal judges are enjoining, are stopping, are saying simply, we're not doing that. I'll give you a couple of instances of that in just a few moments. Simply thwarting, simply saying, judges, I'm not going to follow what you are directing, again, because I am the law. Telling these independent agencies that if they want to do anything with respect to policy, with respect to practice, the implementation of the law, even the expenditures of monies for policies and things that should indeed be within their ambit, they've got to get passage through either the Attorney General or him at the White House. That is a stunning reversal. And again, arguably even more important, this articulation of the view that there is no interpretation of the law. There is no law. There's no enforcement of the law absent what my current president says it is. And that is, of course, contrary to what we've understood for 250 years about how our Constitution works, how that building up there on Capitol Hill works. That's called the Congress. How that other regal building just beyond it on First Street works. That's called the Supreme Court. And in these times of concerns about the future of our nation, this executive order should be a source of dramatic concern and upsetness and dismay for all Americans, regardless, once again, of your political view. Taking a lot of very good texts coming in as a result of our identification of this issue, this event, this rule of law event from just this past week. Very much appreciate the comment from Rich about what we're doing here, and including some references to history and the expertise of part of our amicus commission. Rich, thank you so much for that. Appreciate also Chuck from Racine calling to my attention, and therefore, by virtue of my articulating this and my reference to Thomas Cromwell in this evolution of authority inside Great Britain and England and kings and parliaments, Chuck telling us that Thomas Cromwell is going to be the subject of a major miniseries, an info series on again Thomas Cromwell during the reign of King Henry VIII, that reign also being the subject of a series coming up on PBS beginning on March 23rd. Chuck, appreciate that very much. Also appreciate Christy asking if any of these kinds of things, including presumably this recent executive order, are impeachable offenses. It's a great question as well. Appreciate that, Christy, as well. As we know well, the issue of impeachable offenses, the subject of way too much history in our recent times. We know well that the standard in our Constitution are high crimes and misdemeanors. Gerald Ford very notably said that your impeachable offenses are whatever the Congress says it is. Those articles of impeachment begun in the House and tried, if at all, by the United States Senate. Christie accurately notes that under these circumstances, where there is a majority party in the House that is also the party of my president, highly unlikely that articles of impeachment will proceed from any of this. But if indeed, putting aside that political reality on Capitol Hill, if there are actions that are plainly in violation of the law, the law establishing, for example, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the EPA, the NLRB, all these agencies, and the president directing them to do things financially, policy-wise, that are simply contrary to the law. Well, the Constitution also contemplates that the president take care. Remember this, the take care clause of the Constitution. It is not impossible to contemplate a congressman, a congresswoman, members of Congress, even a majority at some point, identifying articles of impeachment that are premised upon the notion that executing on this executive order, l'état c'est moi, the president has overreached. He is exercising powers that are not his under the Constitution, not his under the legislation as it's passed, and therefore the subject of articles of impeachment. The president, for example, has taken the position that a 1974 law, the Impoundment Control Act, is unconstitutional. And he has said that basically, again, as many of these cases now in federal court, that he can exercise his authority as president to dole out monies as he sees fit. And, of course, under that law, the Congress specifically restricted the president's ability to refuse to spend money that lawmakers had appropriated. That came in the wake of, yes, Richard Nixon. The Justice Department has sought to establish that only the Solicitor General may speak for the executive branch before the Supreme Court. But Congress, once again, has by statute given many of these independent agencies independent litigation authority. I visited this and knew this and embraced this consistently when I was a U.S. attorney. Although the Department of Justice handles most of the litigation in our nation, these independent agencies, many of them have independent litigating authority. And so they appear, yes, indeed, with assistant U.S. attorneys
inside the Department of Justice, but they've got that independent authority. If the president attorney general, if the president's solicitor general articulates the view that they can no longer defend themselves, they can no longer articulate their positions independently in federal court, that's in violation of the law. All of those things are subject to review by a Congress that should be looking at all of this as this happens over not only the recent month or so, but goes forward based upon this issuance of an executive order. The president, of course, also ousting various leaders of these agencies. He ousted a member of the NLRB. That move, of course, disregarded a provision in the congressional law that created the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Agency, that says any member of the board may be removed by the president upon notice and hearing for neglect of duty or malfeasance. That's negative. That's malfeasance, bad actions in office, but for no other cause. Can make the argument, a strong argument, that removal, among others that you know well in the news, is contrary to the law, could be easily subject to an article impeachment that says, Mr. President, you are no longer taking care that the laws of the United States be faithfully executed. And this executive order that you issued on February 18th, in which you say that the law is only what you say it is contrary to the Constitution, contrary to the laws established by the Constitution, and yes, indeed, also contrary to the precedent established by the Constitution that, yes, regrettably, as late as 8 months ago, may have given you some reason to believe that you've got this authority. All of that, a great question, Christy, about impeachable offenses coming up. All of that also a part of other questions coming in. Appreciate very much comments and questions. Let's begin with some of those on our line. Let's begin with Joe from Madison. Joe, appreciate your comments or your questions this morning. Always glad to hear from you.
Terrific show as always, and I really appreciate the history that gets us to this point, and also the kind advice from a previous caller that mentions that Cromwell will be part of a series, which I think would provide even more information and background, but great information about the importance of what Trump has done. I wanted to ask your opinion of another situation that I think bears on the same one, and that is that late on Friday, apparently Trump purged some of the America's top military officials,
yes,
including the current Joint Chiefs of Staff,
right,
a man named Air Force General Brown, and then a woman, U.S. Navy Admiral Lisa Franchetti, was right, also put out to pasture. This is very worrisome, but what struck me as even more worrisome about this is that he apparently at the same time removed the judge advocates general for, yes, the Army, Navy, and the Air Force. Okay, these are positions that ensure enforcement of military justice. Would this not also be true that those three individuals that just were junked by Trump were also responsible for ensuring that people in the military obey the idea that the Constitution is who they should obey, not a particular president? Is it just as worrisome that these JAG officers are tossed on the trash heap and what that portends? In your background as a lawyer and in your time served in the military, I'd love it if you take a few minutes to just chat about.
Absolutely. Joe, tremendously insightful perspectives and questions here. And yes, indeed, just happens Friday night, as Joe just said, firing General C.Q. Brown, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and doing it on his Truth Social platform, announcing the nomination of Air Force Lieutenant General Dan Razzan-Kane as a replacement. Now, again, the president has got some authority to do these kinds of things. I'll focus, as you did just now, Joe, on this notion of getting rid of the JAG officers and the JAG judges as well. You made passing reference to my time as a civilian in Iraq. I have the greatest respect, no but coming up here at all, the greatest respect for those judge advocates generals who not only are responsible for ensuring the enforcement of the law inside our military, but also doing things to keep us safe and secure overseas and, yes, domestically as well. When we come back, I'm going to answer Joe's question in greater specificity and also take more phone calls and more comments. All of that coming up on Amicus, a law review.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Hey, it's me time at Chula Vista. Time for you to pamper yourself Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family, Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, 18 holes of classic golf, a relaxing spa, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park. Zip lining through canyon views in Chula's Aerial Adventure Park. And dining comes any way you like it, from pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
Miles and miles of freshly groomed cross-country and hiking trails. Ski, sled, snowshoe. Warm up at our indoor water park. ChulaVistaResort.com.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel, speaking with you and engaging in good discussion, wonderful discussion, our callers, our texters, about this major thing that happened just this past week, our president declaring himself the law in America and declaring that all these independent agencies have got to be responsive, not just to him, but to his directives financially in terms of policies and practices, changing the ways in which the law works. Again, getting back to Christie's good question, at what point does the Congress come forward and say, you're working in violation of the law, Mr. President? And if you don't stop doing it, we're going to impeach you, because under the Constitution, that's what should be happening. That's what the check and balance for this kind of unbridled exercise, more of it plainly continuing, as Joe just indicated, at the Pentagon on the opposite side of the river there in Washington, D.C., on the Potomac River, at the Pentagon just late this past week, firing the Joint Chief, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and others there at the Pentagon. Also terminating the roles of lawyers there, the JAG officers there. Again, I was commenting right before the break about the incredibly important work that they do every single day in enforcing the law. Yes, indeed, the president is, under our Constitution, the commander in chief. And that's the reason why this issue about adherence to the directives and policy perspectives, when it comes to our national defense, we're vested in our president. On the other hand, the issue that Joe raises about concerns about these unilateral firings, indeed, the firing of the president and until late this past week, the current Joint Chief of Staff, who was appointed by Donald Trump, actually, in his first term, all of that unsettling not only the mechanisms of the Defense Department, but also getting rid of the lawyers and the people who know what they are doing. Once again, getting rid of this expertise inside government that's made government work for all of our times contemporaneously with these actions of trying to undermine exactly what they do. Are there rules and regulations, Joe, inside the Department of Defense that regulate these things? Yes, indeed. Will there be internal administrative challenges to these kinds of things as people are responsible for deciding inside the Department of Defense on how rules and Defense Department issues should be resolved? You bet. And again, when you, as we've seen in these other areas of mass firings, in many other domestic areas, all these kinds of things where the expertise is shown the door and you're no longer there, the question will be, how is it that the Defense Department can work not just with the expertise of the lawyers, but the expertise of all these other people? Anticipate, yes, we may not see them publicly as we do in these other areas in federal court initiated by civil complaints, but internal to the Department of Defense, my own sense, having worked intimately, again, with people like General David Petraeus when I was in Iraq, great respect for the processes of the military and the work that they do to keep us safe, and the internal integrity of these lawyers, and yes, indeed, of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, ensuring that we are safe and secure in this nation. Internal to the Department of Justice,
do not know for certain, but can predict with some reliability that right now there are things going on to challenge both directly and indirectly these recent firings of these major positions there, people occupying those positions, once again, in an attempt to place in those positions people that Donald Trump apparently believes are more loyal to him. Hugely concerning. Joe, appreciate so much your observation about all of this. Bill, calling in from Oconomowoc. Bill, you've got a question of sort of a hostile takeover here and what may happen in our nation. Go ahead, Bill. Thanks for joining our conversation.
Thank you so much for your program. You know, we're talking about impeachment, which is, you know, could happen. But this is more than just impeachment. This is a hostile takeover. We've never had anything quite like this, so we don't have a roadmap how to follow this exactly. Yes, we have, you know, the executive, the judicial, and the legislative. But we know the legislative isn't helping us much. The only one that is helping us now is the judicial. Do you think this could be declared a hostile takeover, a declare of a national emergency declared, and U.S. Marshals would be in charge of the White House? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
What, right. What do you think? I'll hang up and I can't wait to hear you.
Bill, appreciate so much the question that comes out of concern about our nation, right? Exactly. And I would wed your appropriate, not just rhetorical question, to a great comment that's in the text line from Matt coming in from Middleton. He says, at what point is revolution necessary? Maybe another form of a hostile takeover here to have our democracy or get it back. Where are we democratically? And indeed, as many of you know from having listened to me in the past, one of the things that I often look to is the references to foreign nations. We have seen in the pre-Gaza war Israel, when the Israelis were so very upset with their government because of what Benjamin Netanyahu was proposing with respect to the judiciary, a legal takeover there. The prime minister there declaring himself the law. L'état, c'est moi, right? What did they do? They got into the streets. They shut the nation down. You couldn't get into Ben Gurion Airport. People of all employment areas shut down, all kinds of mechanisms there. And indeed, in time, the Supreme Court then said, yes, Mr. Prime Minister, you cannot do exactly what you're doing. We look to South Korea, where once again, this very ill-fated attempt to establish martial law there. What happened? The people flooded the streets of Seoul and other places, and they ensured that their legislatures could get over the fences to overcome the military there that was trying to prevent them from getting into their offices to ensure that that martial law would be brought to its end. And they continue, not only in the wake of the decision by the legislature to impeach the now former president there, they continue to advocate in the streets of America. Now, we hasten, as always, to say we're not advocating never do violence of any kind, but that notion of civil disobedience to a government that has now lost its way. And I think that's what others here are articulating here. Here's the issue with respect to the phone call regarding the marshals in particular, the Marshals Service. And it goes back to your very good point about not having a roadmap here. We've never done this before. The marshals, of course, are appointed by the President of the United States of America. And the U.S. Marshals Service is inside, of course, the Department of Justice as well. That Department of Justice right now headed up by Pamela Bondi. She is an appointee, obviously, of this president. And so U.S. Marshals, I'm sure, are going to be individually conflicted as perhaps they're asked to do things just like our military may be, with which they feel are contrary to our Constitution. But they are still beholden structurally to the Department of Justice, to the president. And all of that kind of thing underscores the very good point that you just made, which is we don't have a roadmap for this. What happens when the very structures that we rely upon to provide those checks and balances are no longer in place? And the people that we would count upon, the legislature, as you just said, the people in Congress who are supposed to be responding, providing oversight, maybe at some point impeachment, if it gets to that point, plainly are not doing what they are supposed to do. The answer is exactly what you advocated for, which is a response to a hostile takeover, a response to a government that's no longer a part of what indeed Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and George Mason contemplated, which is a people that serves the government. And so we think about that as we think about next steps. We'll continue with this important discussion here on Amicus Law Review as we continue to discuss
what the president has done just this past week, taking more of your calls and your questions here on Amicus, a law review.
News from the center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Prayers around the world for Pope Francis, who remains hospitalized for a 10th day in Rome with what the Vatican says is a lung infection. The Vatican today said blood tests show the Pope is in early kidney failure. After Elon Musk's email to federal employees to list five things they accomplished last week or consider themselves out of a job, Musk now appearing to be softening his tone on the initiative, posting on X that, quote, the bar is very low here. On ABC's This Week, New York Congressman Mike Lawler supporting Musk.
As the Department of Government Efficiency moves ahead, what they are seeking to do is ensure that every agency and department is effectively and efficiently doing their job.
One day from the third anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky saying he would resign his office if Ukraine were allowed to join NATO. President Trump called Zelensky a dictator last week. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Wisconsin loses in overtime. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the number 11th ranked Wisconsin Badgers, led by as much as 17 points in the first half against the unranked Oregon Ducks. But then the Badgers started committing turnovers, 17 of them, a season high. The game went into overtime, and Oregon came out on top with the win, 77-73. It's only the second time the Badgers have lost at home this season, head coach Greg Gard.
Obviously, credit goes to Oregon for making us be very uncharacteristic, specifically the last 8 minutes or so. Even most of the second half, we were not nearly as aggressive as we have been.
Up next, the Badgers host Washington Tuesday night. NBA, the Bucks and the Miami Heat in Milwaukee tonight. Baseball, the Brewers with an 8-7 win over the Reds in Cactus League action, thanks to infielder Vinny Capra with a pair of three-run home runs. Outfielder Blake Perkins, out for the start of the season, suffered a fractured shin bone during batting practice. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 32. Partly sunny, upper 40s to near 50 on Monday. For Monday night, mostly cloudy and a low around 29, some light rain possible. Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high of 47. Wednesday, rain and mid-40s.
Right now, 40 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Mississippi has one of the country's worst records for protecting voting rights and advancing democracy reforms. So when pro-voter bills emerge from the state House and Senate, like in-person early voting and the ability to cure a mismatched absentee signature, democracy advocates take notice. Mississippi is one of only three states without some form of in-person early voting, along with Alabama and New Hampshire. The Mississippi Free Press reports that February 12th, the Mississippi Senate passed SB 2654, allowing 15 days of early voting, ending the Saturday before the election at noon. The Republican-sponsored bill passed 39-12, but even if the House advances, it may still be vetoed by Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, who accused the bill's sponsor of making the state's elections less secure. The Mississippi House also took some positive steps. HB 1419 prohibits moving or closing a polling place location within 60 days of an election, sometimes used as a voter suppression tactic. HB 163 sets rules for absentee ballots where the signature on file doesn't match the signed outer ballot envelope and would give the voter a chance to cure the problem. And HB 288 would make each county's five election commissioners nonpartisan positions. All three bills now move to the Senate. We have more on these bills and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt Nair on air.
Oh, Randy Manner is here.
What can you do about this? Focus on what you can impact.
Find the courage to speak up to your elected official. If you are silent, then your elected official at the local, state, or federal level will think you completely agree
yes.
with whatever it is you're doing.
Silence equals acceptance.
Correct.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will break down all of the most recent news and how it affects all of us here in Wisconsin. Plus, this shouldn't be a thing. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, your host for the remaining minutes of our broadcast here on Civic Media. Also joined in the studio by my wonderful producer, Greg, and taking your phone calls, your texts at 855-752-4842. Spending most, if not all, of the hour talking about this stunningly shocking executive order issued by the president. I recognize it's wonky, and I recognize it's the kind of thing that lawyers love to talk about, and we do, but every American should be loving to talk about this because it is of such dramatic import. This notion articulated in writing by the President of the United States of America that all agencies are now subject to his review, his oversight, his authority, and that any interpretation of the law, any interpretation of law by any agency, independent or within the ambit of the White House, that contravenes what he says is not the law. And indeed, the Attorney General also has some authority to announce what the law is. But there is no regulation, no guidance, no position advanced in litigation that does not derive expressly from the president's own interpretation of the law. And along the way, suggesting, of course, that the other branches do not have a role to play. And that leads to a great caller here, Dick, calling in from Madison, raising an issue again about the United States Supreme Court. Dick, glad to have you with us this weekend.
I just read something earlier in the week in the Murdoch Rag, otherwise known as the Wall Street Journal. And the guy talked about somebody, I think his name was in the Treasury in 1935, Humphrey, that FDR wanted to get rid of and then fired him, and the Supreme Court put him back in. I guess what I'm asking, James, is this. I don't trust the Supreme Court at all that to do the right thing. They're a few too many partisan hacks, in my opinion. And when this stuff, if it should go that far, I don't see them as any guardrail whatsoever.
Right. That's the concern, Dick, is it not? We've talked a lot on this broadcast, others, about the guardrails that are out there. And notice we've always focused upon these federal district court judges, the ones who are the trial court judges here in eastern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin, 93 districts around our nation, our territories. They're the ones who are looking at this. They're singular judges, again, appointed by presidents of all parties in recent years. And almost to a person, they're saying, nope, cannot be doing that. So that's the guardrail right now. But to your very good point, the question is what happens after that? And many of these cases are already being appealed by this administration to the appeals courts. And that includes appeals courts like the Fifth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit and others out there, the 11th Circuit, that may not have the same views of these independent individual federal district courts. And then to your very good point, what happens after that if the opinions are not satisfactory to the administration, to the Solicitor General? Then they go up to the Supreme Court. Again, this a little bit of a safeguard there. The Supreme Court has this discretionary decision about whether or not to grant what's called a writ of certiorari to take the case or not. But they're doing some of that, and plainly they'll pick and choose as these cases come up. To your larger point, a Supreme Court that 8 months ago said that we do in fact have a presidency that is not only immune from criminal prosecution, absolutely immune from doing anything of a criminal nature when it comes to communications with the Department of Justice. That's what John Roberts and five other members of the Supreme Court told us 8 months ago. You combine that with this language in the first pages of their opinion that talks once again about this vital and needing to be very quick and muscular and active presidency that cannot be diverted by things like, yes, indeed, criminal prosecutions for violating the law, but anything else that would divert from the appropriate policies and perspectives of the president, those things cannot be tolerated. That's what our Supreme Court said, and that gives rise to your great concern about what they will do if they are both reading what they wrote 8 months ago and also scratching their heads and asking the questions which they should. We know that at least three, maybe four of them will say, you know what, this is too far. This is simply not consistent with the Take Care Clause. You don't have the authority under the legislation, under the Constitution, to do these things like firings and, frankly, other position, providing Elon Musk and other non-governmental people with access to the Treasury Department records and Social Security records, all those kinds of things. You don't have the authority to do that. We would like to think that even this Supreme Court, which has indeed disappointed us when it comes to enforcing this fundamental notion that no one should be above the law, that we do not have a king, back in July 1 of 2024, they said that we do. And so your concern is legitimate, and your concern about what they may do as these cases percolate up from good and decent district court judges and even appeals court judges, it is a concern. All the more reason why Americans today, in February of 2025 and March going forward, as these cases percolate up, frankly, need to be in touch with our Supreme Court justices and, yes, indeed, our representatives in Congress. And, yes, indeed, although you may not get positive or any responses from even branches in the executive branch, agencies in the executive branch, you need to be heard. And that includes doing what you can do nonviolently to let your dismay be known. And that's a part of the constitutional regime that we have in place for 250 years as well. Thank you so much for that wonderful call and that observation as well. And beyond that, we've got some other callers. We've got Mark. You've been waiting on the line for a while. Mark, your comment or question about what we're talking about on this edition of our broadcast.
Yeah, we're certainly facing, as I've said in the past, we're certainly facing the fears that the anti-federalists had about the presidency, and we have a man now that is indeed surrounded by minions and mistresses, and that feels free to do whatever he wants to do at this point in time. The Supreme Court certainly should have to, you know, clip his wings a little bit when these cases finally do make it to him. My fear is with the breakdown of law like this is that we see what has happened in the Russian Federation now since the collapse of the Soviet Union. I mean that assassination and you know, extrajudicial murders have taken place with some regularity over there, and that, and we saw what happened when the Roman Republic collapsed. I mean, when Caesar was assassinated, it wasn't just his enemies that were part of stabbing him with knives; it was his friends as well, because they feared for the Republic.
Et tu Brute, right? Exactly. It's Shakespeare, right? Et tu Brute, exactly. Yep.
And that. I do not want to see the breakdown of law, but I mean that I could easily, because I don't know how clever Donald Trump is, is somebody going to be feeding Trump information? Well, if you take a teaspoon of mercury every day, it's going to ensure you live forever, like the first emperor of Rome, apparently. You know, apocryphally was told stories of that, and that.
And Mark, all your good points raise questions about that are being asked by federal judges.